So let's go and dismiss kids to kids church. We're going to continue today, Ian, talking about trust. Although we're going to turn the corner, we're going to talk about, we're going to talk really about forgiveness today. Let me just again give you just some, you know, some introductory things. I didn't read this quote last week, but it fit and fits. And I have a couple other quotes. There are just so many good things that said about trust. This is by Warren Buffett. And here's what he says about trust. He says, trust is like the air we breathe. When it's present, nobody notices. But when it's absent, everybody notices. And that's true in families, it's true in relationships, it's true in church world. I mean, it just is, you know, it's true in sports teams. When trust is there, everybody, you know, just like nobody thinks about it. We just trust one another. But all of a sudden, when it's gone, there, you know, there's just something wrong. Here's the definition we've been using on trust of by Paul David Tripp. He says, trust is being so convinced that you can rely on the integrity, strength, character, and faithfulness of another that you are willing to place yourself in his or her care. And it's just this idea that I'm so convinced this person has my best interest in mind that I can trust them with whatever it may happen to be. Jesus said this. He said, whoever can be trusted with very little can also be trusted with much. And whoever is dishonest with very little will also be dishonest with much. So kind of the entry stuff that we've talked about over the last few weeks. But today, again, going to turn the corner. What do you do when trust has been compromised? You know, in your family, what do you do when trust has been compromised? As a parent, there's a breach in trust with your child, what do you do? In the work setting, what do you do? You know, in friendships, what do you do when there's a break or somehow trust has been compromised somehow? How do you respond? And we're going to talk about that this week and next week. So that's what we're talking about. Last week, I introduced the idea that there's a continuum of trust in regards to being compromised trust. And the continuum, over here, there's damaged trust. You know, this is where, you know, there's still trust, but it's damaged at some level. And then you get here, and this is where you might call it broken trust, okay? And where there's a break to the trust, but it's not completely what this one would be betrayed, or this is where it's just like it's severed. You know, the whole thing's, it's like there is no trust anymore. It's all gone. And that's kind of the continuum that happens in the area of trust. I used last week an illustration at the very end of elephants. I want to revisit this idea of elephants. And if you were here, you already know what I'm going to talk a little bit of what I'm going to talk about. If you weren't, it'll be new to you. But elephants, one of the great things about elephants is they have a great memory. And one of the terrible things about elephants is what? They have a great memory. So I use the idea of an elephant being tethered. You know, where when the elephant's young, a baby elephant, they will actually do just like this shows right here in order to keep the elephant, in, you know, where they want it to be. And so he's tethered to a stake. He's got a chain around. He's got a shackle on the leg. And as that young elephant tries to pull to be able to move, then all of a sudden it starts feeling the pain, the restriction and the pain, and then realizes, I can't do this. You know, it's bound somehow. And then as they get a little bit older, they make a lighter chain, it's maybe longer. And by the time it's an adult elephant, they got a rope around their ankle with a rope to a stake in the ground, which they could easily pull the stake up out of the ground. They could easily pull it up. But they feel restricted by being tethered to this thing. And I'm using that as an illustration that's what happens when we hold on to places where trust has been compromised. When I hold on to a hurt, when I hold on to, you know, someone has said something, someone has done something, someone has not said something, someone has not done something, whatever it happens to be, a place where trust is damaged, trust is broken, or trust is even severed, when I hold on to that, I find myself tethered, and I begin to believe I can't move forward, and I really can't do anything else but that. And I find myself being restricted. I find myself being held, in essence, held captive to that thing that was, you know, whatever it was that hurt me. This is referred to as learned helplessness, is what it's referred to. That's the term that's used. learned helplessness is the idea that, you know, this thing happens to me. You know, let's just throw out. Let's say there's I could think of so many, and I don't want to go too broad here, but let's just say someone lies, your kid lies to you, okay? Now, most of the kids in our church would never lie to their parents, so this is like, you know, made up kind of a thing, okay? But let's just say your kid lied to you, okay? That might be damaged trust, but it's probably not broken trust at that point, and it's not all the way betrayal, okay? But if it happens enough, and I hold on to that, pretty soon what happens is I begin to think that I don't have any other option but then to respond to my child in anger, to respond to my child in, you know, curtness, to restrictions, all of those kinds of things. I begin to feel like my options hold me in captivity. And it's learned helplessness. And that's what it's referred to. And it's this subconscious mindset where we begin to think we're stuck. And that's exactly what happens, just like an elephant who has this learned helplessness. He believes he's stuck, that she's stuck. They can't go anywhere. So they just, you know, they kind of roam around with the chain around their leg or the rope around their leg. And people do the same thing because they're holding on to something someone did to them. They're holding on to something someone didn't do to them. And it teaches them, they're tethered to it, and it teaches them learned helplessness. You know, a few years ago, quite a few years ago now, there was a gentleman that came to church. His granddaughter had been coming to church quite often, and he came into church, and he sat right in the back corner, kind of where Pastor Gerald's there by the camera, and he sat in the corner. And 3 weeks in a row, he sat back. I didn't get a chance to meet him, you know, on the Sunday morning, but he came and sat. And on the third week, he came up after the service was over, and he said, you know, Pastor Matt, do you ever do coffee with people? And I said, yeah, I love going to coffee with people, and I pay, and so let's do it. And he said, well, here's the thing that I want to talk to you about, and just kind of gave me the brief of it. He said, I want to talk to you because I know the scriptures enough to know that I'm supposed to honor my father and mother, but I hate my dad, and I don't know what to do about it. And so I said, well, let's get together and let's talk about this, you know. And so his story was that when he was born, his mom died in child labor. His mom died. So this left his dad with three little kids, a 4-year-old, a 2-year-old, and then him as a baby. And then the dad, a year later or a year and a half later, whatever it was, he remarried another woman. And they lived together for about 3 years. So at this point, Eddie is the man's name. Eddie's with the Lord now. But Eddie was the man's name. And Eddie said, and when I was about 3 years old, my stepmom said to my dad, you have to choose. It's either me or the kids, because I'm not living with these kids anymore. And my dad sent us all to foster care. And I spent the rest of my childhood going from foster home to foster home. So one of the last foster homes I went to when I was a junior in high school was a Christian family. And I went to church, and I gave my life to the Lord. And he said, then shortly after high school was over, I was drafted to serve in the Korean War. And I have never been in church again till I walked into your church 3 weeks ago. He said, I hate my dad, and I don't know what to do about it. And Eddie was tethered to what his dad had done to him. He said, it controls, this is his words. He said, it controls how I treat my wife. It controls how I parent. And he was tethered to that. And he had this learned helplessness where he felt like, because he just didn't know. He said, he felt like there was no other option but just to have and live with this hatred towards his dad. And all of us would say, well, I probably would have hated my dad too. I mean, we probably would have. So Eddie and I begin to meet and talk about forgiveness and what does forgiveness look like and what are the steps to forgiveness and how do you get to forgiveness? Because it's not a one-time, I'm going to talk about forgiveness today, but forgiveness is not a one-time thing. It is a continual, lifelong thing. Now, sometimes it's, you know, it's pretty easy to do, but sometimes it takes a lifetime. But it is something that Jesus tells us we're supposed to do. So Eddie and I would meet and pray together, and I gave him scriptures, gave him homework, and so on. I don't know, 6 or 8 months later, Eddie was diagnosed with stomach cancer. And so I just kept visiting Eddie and, you know, praying with him and so on. And I don't know, 6 months later or whatever. So he lived about a year longer after he'd been in. We'd met, started meeting to talk about his dad. And he was laying in his bed at Sunlight Beach, Sunlight Shores, laying in his hospital bed, dying of stomach cancer. And I went in to see him one day, kind of 2 or 3 days before he died. And I said, Eddie, man, I am so sorry this whole thing's happening like this. And he looked up, just frail, I mean, skin and bones, if you've been around, you know, people that are dying of cancer. I mean, he's just skin and bones, as frail as could be, but he just looked right up in my eyes and he said, Matt, but I'm going out of this planet and I do not hate my dad anymore. He was no longer tethered to whatever his dad had done. But the problem is, we get tethered. Do you get the illustration of the elephant? We get tethered, and if we don't break free, if we stay in learned helplessness, then it impacts everything that happens in our life. And the only way, it doesn't matter whether trust has been damaged, or trust has been broken, or trust has been severed. It doesn't matter. The same answer for you and me is we have to forgive. Okay? Now, that doesn't mean, and we're going to talk about this next week, that doesn't mean we have to trust again. Okay? Those are two different ideas. Okay? But we have to forgive. Otherwise, we stay tethered to whatever that is. We stay bound by learned helplessness. Okay? Are you all with me? So we have to, and again, it doesn't matter what it is, we have to learn how to forgive. This is one of the, I mean, this might be, it's one of the large, I don't know if it's, how do you qualify what the biggest lesson to learn is? I don't know. But it is one of the significant lessons of following Jesus. Here's what Jesus said. Let me just go back. I have two slides here that have to do with the Lord's Prayer. I want you to read them out loud together with me. So let's just begin. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread. Forgive us our debts as we forgive. When we say that last line, as we forgive our debtors, we're saying, forgive me to the same level, the same depth, the same degree that I'm going to forgive someone else. And I don't think any of us in this room, or anyone that's online, or anyone that will listen online, wants to say, well, Father, just forgive me a little bit, okay? Because I really don't want to forgive, you know, whoever that is, my brother, my sister, whoever it happens to be. You know, just give me a little bit of forgiveness. I mean, we want him to forgive us what? All the way. We want him to forgive all of it. Well, in essence, when we're praying, forgive me my debts all the way, just as I forgive others their debts, what? All the way. Now, again, it doesn't mean you have to trust the person. We'll talk about this next week, okay? But it does mean, as far as the debt is concerned, I'm going to erase the debt. I'm going to say paid in full. You know, someone called me not too long ago and was asking me about, talking to me about the situation in their life and how hard they were struggling to forgive themselves for some things they had done. You know, and it kind of a multiple thing. And some of them were 30 years ago, and they're still holding on to them. And, you know, I said to this person, I said, you know, there's that parable, and we're not going to look at it today. I thought we were, but we're not going to. But the parable of the unforgiving servant. And that's where Peter said, how many times do I forgive my brother? And what did he say? 70 times 7, or an infinite number of times. That's how many times you forgive. Well, if God commands us to forgive an infinite number of times, how many times is God, if God commands us to forgive an infinite number of times, how many times is God going to forgive us? He's not going to ask us to do something he's not going to do. He gives us an infinite, forgives us an infinite number of times. Now, that doesn't give us excuse to just go out and do whatever we want to do because he's going to forgive, although he is going to forgive, okay? But God doesn't ask us to do something. And I said to this person, I said, and why would you hold on to something that God commands you to do? Why would you hold on to it towards yourself? Does that make sense? So we have to get this thing, forgiveness, figured out. It's interesting. The only thing that Jesus revisits on the Lord's Prayer is in verses Matthew 6, 14 and 15. This is the only part of the Lord's Prayer that he revisits. He says this. He says, if you forgive those who sin against you, your heavenly Father will forgive you. And these are some, I think, some of the most scary words in the Bible. But if you refuse to forgive others, your Father will not forgive your sins. I'm not going to do it. I mean, I've had people in my office. I'm not going to do it. I'll never do it. You don't understand. When you say, I'll never forgive, I'm never going to do it. What you're saying is, you never want to be forgiven. Again, I just think that's a scary idea. So he says, if you forgive. I always wondered how this worked, because aren't we forgiven because of Jesus' work on the cross and not because of something I do? I mean, that's what the Bible teaches. It's like, I can't earn my forgiveness. Okay, so if I forgive everybody and I just keep forgiving everybody, then somehow God's going to forgive me and we're all going to be good. We're forgiven based on Jesus, not based on me forgiving others. Beth Moore, a Bible teacher, some of you know the name, and I'm so thankful for, you know, this insight the Lord gave her, is she said, you know what, when you're holding on to bitterness, and you're holding on to unforgiveness, and you're holding on to hurts, and you're holding on to them like this, you can't experience God's forgiveness. And it's only when you open your hands up and let go of whatever that thing is that then you're able to experience the forgiveness God wants you to have. You know, there's that passage of scripture where it says, if you give, it will be given back to you, shaken, running, you know, filled, shaken, running over, you know, kind of the idea. And oftentimes that's used in the church world about finances. It has nothing to do with finances whatsoever. That verse, I probably just popped some of your bubble, but it has nothing to do with finances whatsoever. You know what it has to do with? It's forgiveness. It's in the context of forgiveness. And if you forgive, that's what he's talking about. If you give, if you give this forgiveness, if you extend that forgiveness, then forgiveness will come to you, and it will be pressed down, shaken, and running over, and it says, and you won't even be able to contain. That's the kind of forgiveness I want to experience. And yet what we do is we hold on to this. So let's apply this truth to the idea of trust, okay? And, you know, I was using the Brooklyn Bridge and cables and the whole thing. So this is not a cable from the Brooklyn Bridge, okay? Brooklyn Bridge is still going to stand. But when someone does something, like my child, you know, and we had five kids, and, you know, and I won't tell you the names of on all the dirt on all of them, but I have dirt, okay? But there were times that they would do something, and it damaged the trust. You know, it damaged it. Now, the trust was still there. And if this cord has, I never counted it, but if this cord has 25 strands, then and one of them gets broken, then it loses 1/25th of the strength or weight bearing that a cable can do, okay? And, but there are other times in my life and where it's not just a little cable, you know, a little snap of one of the wires. It's like, you know, like a major, you know, snap where you got, I got wire cutters here. I mean, bolt cutters, just so hang with me here a second. But where a whole bunch of them are cut. Now the cable is actually, and you could actually end up saying, well, there's only a few strands left holding the thing up. You know, most of the forgiveness is gone. I don't know if there's any trust. I don't know if there's any trust left. And then it has never happened in my life where I would say it's been this desperate. But where some of you it has been, where someone comes along and they got bolt cutters and they just totally snap the whole, you know, like it's gone. The trust is broke. Come apart for me. Come on. Come apart for me. Give me one more try here. I didn't try this in advance. You can tell, right? You get the idea? Okay. The interesting thing is, yeah, I should have tried in advance. The interesting thing is, The interesting thing is, if in a relationship, and you guys know this long term, and when I'm talking to young couples and I'm doing pre-marriage counseling or pre-marriage coaching, one of the things I'll say is, this may not be that big a deal right now, but if it goes on for 5 years, if it goes on for 10 years, if it goes on for 15 years, it becomes a very, very significant thing. So it might be over here where you just got one little strand broken. But you break two strands, you break three strands, you break four strands, you break five strands, or you get over here, and now all of a sudden you got half of it, and there's only, 12 strands left, and then you break a few more. The end result is exactly the same as if it's a catastrophic betrayal. Does that make sense? So again, someone, just commits adultery, let's just say, has an affair. It can be catastrophic. It can be. It isn't always, but it can be catastrophic. But the reality is, little compromises on the cables, little compromise here, a little compromise there, another compromise here, another compromise here, and another compromise. And they're only cutting one wire. It's not the whole thing getting cut or damaged. It's just one. But by the time you get enough wires cut, it's the same outcome. Y'all with me? It's the same outcome as if it's a total failure. And it doesn't matter whether it's, my illustration did not work. It doesn't matter whether it's one, a cutting of one strand or two strands or three strands or cutting half the strand or total collapse of the whole thing. It doesn't matter. The outcome, the thing that you and I have to come to grips with is we have to forgive. We have to forgive. We got to figure this thing called forgiveness out. So let me give you some more insights on this. Dan Ryland said, a pattern of small missed promises can lead to a great loss of trust. And again, we've experienced it. And I'm going to talk about that next week. Here's what Paul said in the book of Colossians. He said, make allowance for each other's faults and forgive anyone who offends you. Remember, the Lord forgave you, so you must forgive others. So we're commanded to forgive. We're commanded to forgive. Dr. Henry Cloud, in a book I've given to some of you, have wanted it and I've given it to you, he had these great quotes, and I couldn't choose one of them. So I'm just going to give you all three of them. And if you want this, you just email me and I'll send them to you. But here's what he said. Forgiveness is the way to free yourself. Otherwise, you'll be tied to it and trapped in it for the rest of your life. Or he says, forgiveness is the way to deal with the past and get out of the way so it does not ruin the future. Or one more, he says this. He says, forgiveness cleans out the past so you can evaluate what you want to do with the future. If you're bound to the past, how do you even figure out what you're supposed to do in the future? So you've got to get unbound from whatever that past thing is, whatever that hurt is, whatever that betrayal is, whatever that brokenness is. You've got to get past that in order to even have clarity of what the future might look like. In the book of Hebrews, we're going to look at one more verse. In the book of Hebrews, it says this, work at living in peace with everyone. Look after each other that none of you fails to receive the grace of God. Watch out that no poisonous root of bitterness grows up to trouble you and corrupt many. He kind of gives us these instructions. And one of them, working to live at peace with everyone. What were we talking about? If I have bitterness and resentment towards Sharon, I cannot live in peace with her. I mean, they're on total opposite ends of the spectrum. So I have to work at forgiveness so that I can work at peace with Sharon. Then it says, and look after each other. If you were a Hebrew, a Jewish, who this book was written to, Hebrews was written to, if you were a Jewish believer, this was where it would have taken you back to. It would have taken them, in their minds, they would have gone straight back to Cain and Abel. Because he says, look after your brother. Would have gone right back to look after each other here. It would take them back to Cain and Abel. Do you remember? If you don't know the story, so Cain and Abel were, some of the first kids of Adam and Eve, and Cain gets jealous of Abel, and so has this, he has this attitude. God actually confronts him about the attitude. He doesn't listen to God, and so one day he says to his brother, he says, "Hey, let's go out to the field." So they head out to the field, and Cain kills Abel, And afterwards, then God says to Cain, he says, hey, where's your brother? Where's your brother? And he goes, how do I know? Am I my brother's keeper? Now, does that sound like words of forgiveness, or does that sound like words of bitterness? Sounds like words of bitterness. He said, what, am I my brother's keeper? I hate him. You know, that's what he was saying. And that's what they would have come back to. And then that's what would have come to their mind. And then he says this whole idea of not letting, watch out that no poisonous root of bitterness. Bitterness, and let me just talk about roots here for a second. I hate weeds. Many of you know that. If you've been around the church, you're like, I hate weeds. I hate weeds. Bitterness and unforgiveness have, it's interesting, of roots. They don't just have one kind of root. They got all kinds of roots. It's like, you know, with a weed, there's a weeds that have a tap root, like this picture here. I mean, I think it's on there, isn't it? Are we up? There we go. Like this tap root. You know, where the roots, you know, the weed's just above the grass, but man, it's got this long old thing, and it goes down in there, and then it has all the fingers that go out. And, you know, you try and pull that thing out without breaking it off, because otherwise you're going to be pulling it again. That's the reality. Same with bitterness. You try to pull it out, you try to deal with it, and you don't get the roots of it. I mean, all the fingers of it, it'll come back. So you've got, bitterness has a tap root. Man, it goes deep into a person's heart. Deep, deep in a person's heart. You know, like in the story I was telling about Eddie. Deep. And not only does it go deep, but it also, go ahead and go to the next slide, it also goes wide. I mean, we're like ivy, the roots just travel, and they just keep going and going and going. And, you know, next thing it's on another tree, and then it's on another tree. And, I mean, the underground, I mean, just everywhere, underground. You know, one time I worked on a fire in down on the Columbia Gorge, and we were actually doing a controlled burn in the area of where this fire was, and then this fire started up, and so they called us off our fire to go to this other fire, and you know, and they're sending in planes with Phos-Check to drop fire retardant on us and so on, and after we worked on it for a number of days, the fire got back under control. And then we found out what that fire was. Like, what started? Was that a lightning fire? Was that, an arson fire? What started the fire? Found out that was, the fire got restarted from a burn the year before that had, in hemlocks. And it had smoldered underground in the hemlock roots all winter long till the east wind started blowing down the Columbia River Gorge and started the fire up again. And that's the kind of web. I mean, so not only does bitterness do this deep, but it starts doing this. You know, I got bitterness towards my mom. Pretty soon I got bitterness towards my wife, and I got bitterness towards my kids, and I got bitterness towards the people in the church, and I got bitterness towards people at work. And I think you probably know people who are like, yeah, they're bitter. I mean, it's not even something you've done. But you sense it. Y'all with me? It's because it not only does it do this, but it does this. And then you know what else it does? And we took this picture in Hawaii last year when we were there. This is actually one of those trees where the tree grows up, but then the roots, the branches come out, and the branches go down, and they just start planting under. I mean, this thing was like, I don't know. I mean, it was huge, like this end of the gym right here, this section. I mean, it was just huge. And all those, the branches or the roots, whatever they are, they go back down underground, and then they start coming up somewhere else. And next thing you know, there's this huge, massive compilation of these roots that are there. And that's exactly what he says. And he says, if you don't take care of this, if you don't watch out for this this poisonous root, it will ruin, what did he say? It will ruin you, and it will what? Corrupt others, is what it said. Because that's what bitterness does. Bitterness doesn't just affect me. It starts affecting everyone around me. And you have to deal with it. You have to deal with, what does that look like, and how do I get rid of this? And unforgiveness and bitterness is unseen until it's seen. You know, I've had people in my office over the years, you know, I'm doing talking to them about marriage or whatever it happens to be. And I remember this one person sitting in a chair, and the chair that I had in the office at the time had arms on it. And they're sitting in the chair. And at some point they grabbed the arms of the chair, looked right at me and said, "I have already forgiven. I am not bitter. Why do you keep talking to me about this?" You know, I thought they're going to rip the arms off the chair. For them, they didn't believe they were bitter. They didn't believe they hadn't forgiven. But they were still holding on to all of this resentment so much that like they're going to rip the arms off the chair. See, if unforgiveness and bitterness is unseen until it's not unseen. So I'm going to give you some thoughts here about how do I forgive. If you want to know more about this, on our website, go in the top corner, just go to our homepage, swagchurch.com. Go to our home. When I tell people our URL is swagchurch.com, they go, "That's the best URL in the world." Thank you, Gerald. But swagchurch.com, and in the top corner it says messages. Click that, and up will come a six-part series called The Art and Science of Forgiveness. And we have people that listen to it all the time. And I shared it with a young mom who goes to another church just recently. She was talking to me about something, one of the families from our school. And I saw her then at Les Schwab a couple weeks ago. And she said, "Man, I feel like I've been hanging out with you all morning because I'm just going through all those teachings on forgiveness." And it'll give you more insight into this subject of forgiveness. And so if that would be helpful to you. You know, when we make a choice to forgive, and that's what forgiveness is. It's a choice. It's not a feeling. It's a choice. And we know it's a choice we have to make because we're commanded to make it. God commands us to forgive. That means we make the choice to forgive. And when we do that, we're following Jesus' example. Remember, Jesus is hanging on the cross, and you know, he's just been hung there by the Romans, by the Jews. And what does Jesus say? Some of his last words: "Father, forgive them, because they do not know what they're doing." That's what he said. And then Stephen, following Jesus' example, Stephen, the first disciple to lose his life for being a Jesus follower, they're throwing stones at him to kill him. And Stephen looks up and he says, "Lord, do not hold this against them." I mean, just imagine that. You're laying there and you're being pelted with rocks and you are about to die. And you look up and say, "Lord, don't hold this against them. Don't hold this sin against them." When you choose to forgive, you're following the example of Jesus. And again, it doesn't matter what it happens to be. You're actually saying, "Father, I forgive them." You're making the choice. "I forgive them." Like for me, that means I'm driving down the road and I see a car, and this car looks, red car, let's say, and I start thinking about that person that driving that red car. Now, I don't even know it's the same person, but I'm thinking about that person that drives that red car. And you start arguing with them. You ever do this? You know, you start arguing with them. You haven't seen them in a long time, and you're having an argument with them. Like, why would they have done that? I can't believe they did that. You know, 5 miles down the road, you're still arguing with the people that were in the red car. Am I the only one that does this? Okay, so some of you are shaking your head. Some of you are lying. But we have these arguments with people we haven't even been around for a long time. We haven't even seen. We start having this argument. And I just go, wait a second, stop. I'm talking to myself. I mean, I do this. I'm just talking to myself. I mean, because they think I'm talking on my speakerphone. You know, they don't know I'm talking. Yeah, we're all good. We're all covered now by, And I say, "Father, I don't want to be a bitter man. I don't want to be a bitter man. I don't want to be a bitter person." And so I just choose to forgive them. And then I'll take it from there. I'll say, not only do I choose to forgive them, but Father, I'm asking you to forgive them. Well, who wants to do that? I mean, David in the Psalm said, "Man, rip their throats out, God. You know, to kill them." I mean, that's how David prayed. But I think what Jesus wants us to do is to follow his example and Stephen's example. Father, forgive them. Forgive them. And then what do you tell us to do? To pray for our enemies. Bless those who curse us. Pray for our enemies. And so then we start praying. And you know what ends up happening? Does it change the relationship? No. Does it change them? It might, in some ways. But you know what it does? changes me. You know, one of the lines, and I could talk, I mean, I could talk for weeks on this. I have talked for weeks on this. Some of you have been around like, I heard this before. But one of the lines we use in our culture is we say, well, time heals all things. That is not true. If time healed all things, the older people get, the happier they would be. And the older they are, the happier they would be. But too often, who said that? Who said the grumpier? Fatty did. Fatty did. And but isn't that too often the reality? The older people get what? The grump. I mean, they're known to, like, there's a whole movie, Grumpy Old Men. And they could have made one, Grumpy Old Women. And grumpy old married couples. Time doesn't heal all things. Jesus heals all things when people cooperate with the principles of the Scripture and the Holy Spirit, and they make the choice to forgive. And it doesn't matter if it's, you know, you could say, well, but Matt, what about someone who's been raped? Well, there are two options. Is they either forgive and overcome all of the turmoil and trauma of being raped, or they become bitter. I mean, we love those stories in America. We love those stories where someone, you know, murders someone, and then the mom adopts the murderer in forgiveness. Or the Amish, remember a few years ago when the Amish, when the shooters came in, and the Amish all go to court and say, we forgive? I mean, 60 Minutes made a whole program on the Amish forgiving the murderer of all of these people in their community. We love those stories in America. But it's really, really hard to do. It's really hard to do. But it's what Jesus commands, so he can help us to do it. He can help us to do it. And you know, if you have a whole, I was thinking my cable was going to be like some pieces. And I was going to say, if you have a whole pile of pieces of broken cables of trust over there, and you don't forgive them, then what you will do is you will hold people at bay. I'm not going to trust again. And Jesus wants you to trust. He wants you to trust. But that means you got to deal with the things where trust was damaged, broken, or catastrophically severed because of betrayal. Let's stand together. Sarah, will you come to the piano? Now, I know that in, you know, oh, you know what I forgot to do? Sit back down for just a second. You stay up here. I forgot to do something here. You know, last week, Matthew gave, we talked about Matthew was doing that morning, the morning before the missionary was here, speaking to a crowd in Pakistan. He thought it was going to be about 5,000 people. And it actually, he ends up, throw the first slide up. This is actually Matthew up there on Zoom. And Matthew is here. His interpreter, who's a Pakistani man, is in Texas, interpreting it to the crowd in Pakistan. And like 1,300 people committed their lives to follow Jesus. This should be a video. Will it play? See if it'll if you can. Okay, it doesn't play. Okay. Well, it's a 24-second video. I mean, this is the crowd. He thought it was going to, they told him it would be 5,000. It was between 9,000, 10,000 people that was in this crowd. And some of you made that all possible. And then Matthew and the team he worked with were able to purchase 600. They look like flashlights, but they're audio Bibles to give to people who, families who didn't have access to a Bible. And so it's a little flashlight, and it plays in Urdu, their language. But isn't that incredible? I mean, the amazing thing of technology. Amazing thing of technology. Well done, Matthew. Matthew, why don't you stand? Just so everyone, like, who's Matthew? That's Matthew. Well done, Matthew. Let's all stand together again now. Sarah's going to lead us in a song. And you may want to sing. You may want to sing. But it may be that as I've been talking, you realize, you like something comes right to your heart, right to your spirit, and you know you need to forgive him. You need, you know you need to forgive him. You know, when we first came here, we did a marriage seminar and had a guest speaker. And the guest speaker's husband and wife, and they said, here's your homework. We were living in the little parsonage. Those of you that are old enough to remember the parsonage. We were living in the little parsonage. And we went home that night, and he said, here's your homework. Sit down on the couch and ask the Lord, is there anyone I failed to forgive? And so Barb and I could do our homework, sit next to each other on the couch. And I said, Lord, show us if there's someone we failed to forgive. I asked Barbara a few months later, like, anybody come to your mind? She said, nobody. And she said, how about you? And she said, you know what came to my mind was forgiving the boyfriends you had. And I said, it's just a weird thought. And she said, well, I've known that for years. You need to forgive them. I said, how'd you know that? She said, because we go home and if somebody mentions one of these guys that I dated, and I can just see you stiffen up and like the hair on the back of your neck go up. I'm like, really? She said, yeah, I mean, I've known it for years. See, there are things we don't even know we need to forgive, but God might want to point out, or maybe it came straight to your heart, like, okay, he's talking about me and he's talking about this situation, whatever that happens to be. You have to make a choice. You got to make the choice today, maybe 100 times today. And then you got to make the choice tomorrow, and you got to make the choice Tuesday and Wednesday and Thursday, and then you got to make it in August, and you got to make it in September, and you got to make it in December, and you'll have to make it in 2027 and 2028 until you're not wrestling with it anymore. Well, Lord, I pray that as we sing this song, there's some pinpointing you're wanting to do. Pinpointing about people we grumble about, people we argue with when we're not around them, people that are long gone, people we haven't seen for years, people that we can't believe they would do this to us. Lord, I pray, teach us how to forgive. You were the greatest forgiver who ever walked on the planet. Yes. And you want us to learn how to forgive. And Lord, those in the room that you're pinpointing something, help them today to start the process of making the choice to forgive. Again, you can sing with Sarah, or you can do a little business with God at this point.